Chapter 160. Return. I landed in London on a wintry autumn evening. It was dark and raining, and I saw more fog and mud in a minute than I had seen in a year. I walked from the Custom House to the Monument before I found a coach, and although the very house fronts, looking on the swollen gutters, were like old friends to me, I could not but admit that they were very dingy friends. I have often remarked, I suppose everybody has, that one's going away from a familiar place would seem to be the signal for change in it. As I looked out of the coach window, and observed that an old house on Fish Street Hill, which had stood untouched by painter, carpenter, or bricklayer, for a century, had been pulled down in my absence, and that a neighboring street, of time-honored insalubrity and inconvenience, was being drained and widened, I half expected to find St. Paul's Cathedral looking older. For some changes in the fortunes of my friends, I was prepared. My aunt had long been re-established at Dover, and Traddles had begun to get into some little practice at the bar, in the very first term after my departure. He had chambers in Gray's Inn now, and had told me, in his last letters, that he was not without hopes of being soon united to the dearest girl in the world. They expected me home before Christmas, but had no idea of my returning so soon. I had purposely misled them, that I might have the pleasure of taking them by surprise. And yet, I was perverse enough to feel a chill and disappointment in receiving no welcome, and rattling, alone and silent, through the misty streets. The well-known shops, however, with their cheerful lights, did something for me, and when I alighted at the door of the Gray's Inn Coffee House, I had recovered my spirits. It recalled, at first, that so different time, when I had put up at the Golden Cross, and reminded me of the changes that had come to pass since then, but that was natural. Do you know where Mr. Traddles lives in the inn? I asked the waiter, as I warmed myself by the coffee room fire. Holborn Court, sir. Number 2. Mr. Traddles has a rising reputation among the lawyers, I believe? Said one. Well, sir, returned the waiter, probably he has, sir, but I am not aware of it myself. This waiter, who was middle-aged and spare, looked for help to a waiter of more authority, a stout, potential old man, with a double chin, in black breeches and stockings, who came out of a place like a churchwarden's pew, at the end of the coffee room, where he kept company with a cash box, a directory, a law list, and other books and papers. Mr. Traddles, said the spare waiter. Number 2 in the court. The potential waiter waved him away, and turned, gravely, to me. I was inquiring, said I, whether Mr. Traddles, at number 2 in the court, has not a rising reputation among the lawyers? Never heard his name, said the waiter, in a rich husky voice. I felt quite apologetic for Traddles. He's a young man, sure? Said the portentous waiter, fixing his eyes severely on me. How long has he been in the inn? Not above 3 years, said one. The waiter, who I supposed had lived in his churchwarden's pew for 40 years, could not pursue such an insignificant subject. He asked me what I would have for dinner. I felt I was in England again, and really was quite cast down on Traddles' account. There seemed to be no hope for him. I meekly ordered a bit of fish and a steak, and stood before the fire musing on his obscurity. As I followed the chief waiter with my eyes, I could not help thinking that the garden in which he had gradually blown to be the flower he was an arduous place to rise in. It had such a prescriptive, stiff-necked, long-established, solemn, elderly air. I glanced about the room, which had had its sanded floor sanded, no doubt, in exactly the same manner, when the chief waiter was a boy, if he ever was a boy, which appeared improbable, and at the shining tables, where I saw myself reflected, in unruffled depths of old mahogany, and at the lamps, without a fly in their trimming or cleaning, and at the comfortable green curtains, with their pure brass rods, snugly enclosing the boxes, and at the two large coal fires, brightly burning, and at the rows of decanters, burly as if with the consciousness of pipes of expensive old port wine below, and both England and the law appeared to me to be very difficult indeed, to be taken by storm. I went up to my bedroom to change my wet clothes, and the vast extent of that old wainscoted apartment which was over the archway leading to the inn, I remember, and the sedate immensity of the four-post bedstead, and the indomitable gravity of the chests of drawers, all seemed to unite in sternly frowning on the fortunes of Traddles, or on any such daring youth. I came down again to my dinner, and even the slow comfort of the meal, and the orderly silence of the place which was bare of guests, the long vacation not yet being over, were eloquent on the audacity of Traddles, and his small hopes of a livelihood for 20 years to come. I had seen nothing like this since I went away, and it quite dashed my hopes for my friend. The chief waiter had had enough of me. He came near me no more, but devoted himself to an old gentleman in long gaiters, to meet whom a pint of special port seemed to come out of the cellar of its own accord, for he gave no order. The second waiter informed me, in a whisper, that this old gentleman was a retired conveyancer living in the square, and worth a mint of money, which it was expected he would leave to his laundress's daughter. Likewise that it was rumored that he had a service of plate in a bureau, all tarnished with lying by, though more than one spoon and a fork had never yet been beheld in his chambers by mortal vision. By this time, I quite gave Traddles up for lost, and settled in my own mind that there was no hope for him. Being very anxious to see the dear old fellow, nevertheless, I dispatched my dinner, in a manner not at all calculated to raise me in the opinion of the chief waiter, and hurried out by the back way. Number 2 in the court was soon reached, and an inscription on the doorpost informing me that Mr. Traddles occupied a set of chambers on the top story, I ascended the staircase. A crazy old staircase I found it to be, feebly lighted on each landing by a club-headed little oil wick, dying away in a little dungeon of dirty glass. In the course of my stumbling upstairs, I fancied I heard a pleasant sound of laughter, and not the laughter of an attorney or barrister, or attorney's clerk or barrister's clerk, but of two or three merry girls. Happening, however, as I stopped to listen, to put my foot in a hole, where the Honorable Society of Gray's Inn had left a plank deficient, I fell down with some noise, and when I recovered my footing all was silent. Groping my way more carefully, for the rest of the journey, my heart beat high, when I found the outer door, which had Mr. Traddles painted on it, open. I knocked. A considerable scuffling within ensued, but nothing else. I therefore knocked again. A small sharp-looking lad, half footboy and half clerk, who was very much out of breath, but who looked at me, as if he defied me to prove it legally, presented himself. "Is Mr. Traddles within?" ?" I said. "Yes, sir, but he's engaged." ?" "I want to see him." ?" After a moment's survey of me, the sharp-looking lad decided to let me in, and opening the door wider for that purpose, admitted me, first, into a little closet of a hall, and next into a little sitting room, where I came into the presence of my old friend, also out of breath, seated at a table, and bending over papers. "Good God!" ?" cried Traddles, looking up. "It's Copperfield!" ?" rushed into my arms, where I held him tight. "All well, my dear Traddles?" ?" "All well, my dear, dear Copperfield, and nothing but good news." ?" we cried with pleasure, both of us. "My dear fellow," said Traddles, rumpling his hair in his excitement, which was a most unnecessary operation, "my dearest Copperfield, my long-lost and most welcome friend, how glad I am to see you. How brown you are. How glad I am. Upon my life and honor, I never was so rejoiced, my beloved Copperfield, never. I was equally at a loss to express my emotions. I was quite unable to speak, at first. My dear fellow, said Traddles, and grown so famous, my glorious Copperfield. Good gracious me, when did you come, where have you come from, what have you been doing? Never pausing for an answer to anything he said, Traddles, who had clapped me into an easy chair by the fire, all this time impetuously stirred the fire with one hand, and pulled at my neck kerchief with the other, under some wild delusion that it was a great coat. Without putting down the poker, he now hugged me again, and I hugged him, and, both laughing, and both wiping our eyes, we both sat down, and shook hands across the hearth. To think, said Traddles, that you should have been so nearly coming home as you must have been, my dear old boy, and not at the ceremony. What ceremony, my dear Traddles? Good gracious me! Cried Traddles, opening his eyes in his old way. Didn't you get my last letter? Certainly not, if it referred to any ceremony. Why, my dear Copperfield, said Traddles, sticking his hair upright with both hands, and then putting his hands on my knees, I am married. Married. I cried joyfully. Lord bless me, yes, said Traddles by the Reverend Horace to Sophie down in Devonshire. Why, my dear boy, she's behind the window curtain. Look here. To my amazement, the dearest girl in the world came at that same instant, laughing and blushing, from her place of concealment. And a more cheerful, amiable, honest, happy, bright-looking bride, I believe, as I could not help saying on the spot, the world never saw. I kissed her as an old acquaintance should, and wished them joy with all my might of heart. Dear me, said Traddles, what a delightful reunion this is. You are so extremely brown, my dear Copperfield. God bless my soul, how happy I am. And so am I, said one. And I am sure I am. Said the blushing and laughing Sophie. We are all as happy as possible. Said Traddles. Even the girls are happy. Dear me, I declare I forgot them. Said one. The girls, said Traddles. Sophie's sisters. They are staying with us. They have come to have a peep at London. The fact is, when was it you that tumbled upstairs, Copperfield? It was, said I, laughing. Well then, when you tumbled upstairs, said Traddles, I was romping with the girls. In point of fact, we were playing at Puss in the Corner. But as that wouldn't do in Westminster Hall, and as it wouldn't look quite professional, if they were seen by a client, they decamped. And they are now listening, I have no doubt, said Traddles, glancing at the door of another room. I am sorry, said I, laughing afresh, to have occasioned such a dispersion. Upon my word, rejoined Traddles, greatly delighted, if you had seen them running away, and running back again, after you had knocked, to pick up the combs they had dropped out of their hair, and going on in the maddest manner, you wouldn't have said so. My love, will you fetch the girls? Sophie tripped away, and we heard her received in the adjoining room with a peal of laughter. Really musical, isn't it, my dear Copperfield? Said Traddles. It's very agreeable to hear. It quite lights up these old rooms. To an unfortunate bachelor of a fellow who has lived alone all his life, you know, it's positively delicious. It's charming. Poor things, they have had a great loss in Sophie who, I do assure you, Copperfield is, and ever was, the dearest girl. And it gratifies me beyond expression, to find them in such good spirits. The society of girls is a very delightful thing, Copperfield. It's not professional, but it's very delightful. Apostrophe, observing that he slightly faltered, and comprehending that in the goodness of his heart he was fearful of giving me some pain by what he had said, I expressed my concurrence with a heartiness that evidently relieved and pleased him greatly. But then, apostrophe said Traddles, our domestic arrangements are, to say the truth, quite unprofessional altogether, my dear Copperfield. Even Sophie's being here is unprofessional. And we have no other place of abode. We have put to sea in a cockboat, but we are quite prepared to rough it. And Sophie's an extraordinary manager. You'll be surprised how those girls are stowed away. I am sure I hardly know how it's done. Apostrophe, apostrophe, are many of the young ladies with you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I inquired. The eldest, the beauty is here, apostrophe said Traddles, in a low confidential voice, Caroline. And Sarah's here, the one I mentioned to you as having something the matter with her spine, you know. Immensely better. And the two youngest, that Sophie educated, are with us. And Louis is here. Apostrophe, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried one. Yes, apostrophe said Traddles. Now the whole set, I mean the chambers, is only three rooms, but Sophie arranges for the girls in the most wonderful way, and they sleep as comfortably as possible. Three in that room, apostrophe said Traddles, pointing. Two in that. Apostrophe, I could not help glancing round, in search of the accommodation remaining for Mr. and Mrs. Traddles. Traddles understood me. Well, apostrophe, apostrophe said Traddles, we are prepared to rough it, as I said just now, and we did improvise a bed last week, upon the floor here. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.